The 20th chapter this morning, verse 1. It's been a couple of weeks. If you remember, when we ended our class Sunday before last, a young man had come to Jesus asking him what to do to inherit eternal life. And Jesus told him what? Keep the commandments, keep the law. And he said, I've done all those things, so what else do I lack? And he said, well, if you want to be perfect, sell all that you got and give it to the poor and come and follow me. So the young man went away sorrowful because he was very rich, and we talked about the fact that that was his focus, and he didn't want to give up those things. He was a good man, but he didn't want to make the sacrifice. So Jesus talked to his disciples about how hard it is for one who is rich to enter the kingdom of heaven, simply because of the fact that the riches are the focus of their lives. And Peter reminded him that they had left all and followed him. And Jesus tells them that, you know, not only them, they would sit on the 12 thrones judging Israel, but not only them, but everyone who had left all to follow and given up things to follow Christ would be saved. So it wasn't just them. And he ended that saying, the last will be first and the first will be last. And we'll talk about that a little bit because he continues that this morning. So as we come to chapter 20, the first 16 verses, we have the parable of the laborer in the vineyard. And for time's sake, we're not going to read it. I hope you read it beforehand. But the story talks about a master who went out very early in the morning. The thought here would have been about dawn, about 6 o'clock in the morning. And he hired laborers to go in his vineyard for a denarius a day, a day's wages. And so he went back at various times during the day. He went back at 9 a.m. He went back at noon. He went back at 3 p.m. And he hired more workers that he had saw in the marketplace that were standing around, didn't have anything to do. So he goes back toward the end of the day, about 5 p.m., let's say, and there were other workers who were standing there and he said, why are you standing here all day? And they said, well, nobody's hired us. So we hired them to go into the vineyard to work, and he said, I'll give you whatever's fair. So when the end of the day came, he told his steward or whoever was in charge to pay them their wages. Well, they all got a what? They all got a denarius. They all got the same thing. And Deuteronomy 24 and verse 15, one of the laws of the Jews was that when you hired day labor, at the end of the day, you had to pay them because they were poor and they were expecting to be paid. So he paid them and they all got the same thing. Well, he started at the ones who came in at the end of the day and he gave them a denarius. And then up until the ones who had worked all day. They worked through the heat, they worked through the sun, they'd worked all day long, 12 hours or whatever. And they were upset because they got a what? They got the same thing. So they grumbled about it. Well, what did this master say?
You agreed to pay or work for this much money, and you did.
I paid you what you agreed to. You know, is my eye evil or your eye evil because you want more? I paid you what I agreed, and it's my money. I can do whatever I want to with it. And he repeats that the last shall be first and the first shall be last. And so some were hired early in the morning. Some were hired mid-morning. Some were hired at noon. Some were hired mid-afternoon. Some were hired at the end of the day. And they all receive the same reward. So what's the lesson here? What does the vineyard represent? Okay. The church, yes, because the vineyard would represent work. So workers in the Lord's vineyard, okay? So who are these laborers? God's elect, right? Disciples, believers. To us, it would be us as Christians today. And the reward is greater than a denarius because the reward would be what? Eternal, okay? Eternal life in heaven, okay? And if you wanted to go that far, the evening would represent the closing days until the judgment or till we die or whatever, where judgment is going to come and the reward is going to be given. Well, this certainly, I think, stands against people who would teach that there are different degrees of punishment and reward because they all what? They all seem to receive the same. And I think, in a way, as he continues this, you can look back and see that this is also teaching his disciples that would be his apostles. And it's teaching others as well because some are going to serve all their lives, okay? And they're going to serve under difficult circumstances. You know, we're blessed. We have people who are trying their best to worship God this morning. And they're not worshiping under the ideal circumstances. They may have a government who, if they were to catch them, they could go to prison or worse. We have people who are meeting this morning to worship God that are meeting, if they're lucky, under a thatched roof with no walls, no air conditioner, no PA system, no live stream. So, and you have others who might just be meeting under a tree. But they're worshiping God, okay? And you may have some who became a Christian early, and they've worked all their lives, okay? And they have a lot of difficulties, and they have a lot of trials, and they have a lot of things that go on in their lives that are negative, that they have to overcome. And then you may have someone that obeys the gospel late in life, and a short time, then they're gone. What's the answer? We're all going to receive the same reward, right? Robert, I see you, James.
I relate back to Wednesday night's sermon. That of joy, it just means that you've had more joy longer than I have.
That's a good way to look at it. Absolutely. Absolutely. And Jesus talked about that to his disciples when he said, and my mind's gone blank. You know, you get old, your mind goes. You know, somebody can finish that. Jesus is talking to his disciples, and he talks about that. And he talks about the fact that people give up things in this world, but there's reward in this world. And there's reward in the world to come.
I was talking to Peter.
Yes.
About giving up all and then
yes. And so what is the reward in this life? It's not that God's going to give us mansions and land and a big family. What's he talking about?
Hope.
He's talking about the joy that we have, our hope that we have, the family that we have here today, our spiritual family, okay? The joy that we have. Okay, James?
What about deathbed confessions?
I think that's something God will have to judge, okay? If you take someone that has been a Christian and they've been faithful and they fall away, okay, and then they get deathly sick and they do a deathbed confession, it's between them and God, okay? Whether they're just saying that or whether that's coming from the heart. I mean, that's something God will have to judge. Now, someone on their deathbed that's never been baptized, and that's another thing, you know. Yeah, absolutely.
He had a member that the dad had never been baptized, and he was in the hospital and critically ill. They found a place in the hospital. I think they put him in the therapy tub, and he was baptized.
There you go. There's always a way. Absolutely. But sprinkling him wouldn't have worked, you know. Pouring him wouldn't have worked. If I remember my history correct, the first sprinkling was somebody that was on their deathbed that had never been baptized before. That doesn't, they decided to sprinkle him. That doesn't work. But I think that's between them and God. How sincere are they, and what's their relationship with God? Absolutely. But the fact remains, we all have the same reward, regardless of how we've served or what we've done. I think, you know, that doesn't mean that these laborers stood there and he came and offered them a job and they said, no, I don't think we'll take it, you know. And then he comes back at 9 and he offers them a job and they're like, I think we'll wait. And then he comes back at noon and he comes back at 3 and he says, I think they'll wait. Then he comes back at 5 and they say, yeah, we'll go. That's not what this is talking about. So just keep those things in mind. It's not an excuse to stand by and not obey the Lord. Those who stand by and refuse to obey the Lord will find themselves what? Outside, right? And the reward that we have is not something we earn. What is it? It's the grace and favor of God, the mercy of God through his goodness, through his grace. Okay? Anything else on that? Yes.
Again, think about all the joy and the fellowship and all we've had if you've done it.
You miss all that. Exactly.
You get rewards on earth.
Yes.
In terms of what the joy you get and growth and encouragement you get from getting fellowship.
Absolutely. Tell you. Yeah, and that was a problem that Jesus' disciples had, and that's why he had to deal with it. Somebody else had their hand up.
I was going to say your quality of life would have been better, too.
Absolutely.
The older person would regret things that they did and wish they would have been baptized earlier.
Exactly.
Going back to what David said, the problem with those who have jealousy is they fail that none of us earn that reward. God gives us that reward. And
yes.
Grateful. So it's not that, well, I did it from earlier times. It's kind of like the disciples. You're going to be on the left and right.
Yes.
If there's outskirts of heaven, I'll be happy if I'm on the outskirts.
Absolutely. 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 You know, Jesus said, and I can't remember where we studied it at, he says basically when you've done all that you can do, when you've done all that you have done, all you can say is we're unprofitable servants. I can't remember the scripture right off the top of my head. It's in Luke chapter maybe 15, 16, something like that, okay? But anyway, yes, absolutely. So as we continue in Matthew chapter 20, Jesus foretells his death for the third time, that he is going to Jerusalem, and they can't hardly believe that he's going to Jerusalem. So he took them aside and he told them again, and this is the third time that he's told them this, once being at the Transfiguration. And he told them very emphatically what's going to take place, that he'll be delivered. In other words, he'll be betrayed. We know he was betrayed by Judas, that he would be condemned by the Jewish Sanhedrin, that he would be delivered to the Gentiles, in this case the Romans, and that they would scourge him and they would crucify him, and then he would rise the third day, and all the things that the prophets had prophesied of him would be accomplished. But his disciples were so fixed on their thoughts and their ideas, and their mind was so closed that they couldn't perceive what he was talking about. It was only later that they would understand the significance of what Jesus was trying to tell them. So immediately as they're traveling, the mother of James and John, who would be Zebedee's wife, her name was Salome or Salome, however you want to pronounce it. One text says she came to Jesus. The other text says that James and John came to Jesus. Requesting what? Yes, I got something I want to ask you. And Jesus is like, okay, so what is it? What can I do for you? Well, I want, you know, one of my sons to sit on your right hand and one to sit on your left hand in your glory, in your kingdom. And Jesus says, well, are you able to suffer the same things that I'm suffering? Are you able to be baptized with the same things that I'm going to be baptized? And they said, yeah, we're able. And he said, well, you're going to suffer those things. But it's not mine to give who sits at my right hand and my left hand. It's the Father's who decides that. And so when the other disciples heard it, what kind of reaction did they have? Yeah, they didn't like it very well. We don't know why they didn't like it very well. Were they upset because they would even dare Jesus ask this question? Were they upset because they didn't ask it to start with? We don't know. But they were upset about it. So Jesus has to, again, teach them humility and being servant of all. He says, you know the Gentiles rule over you and their great ones exercise their authority over you. But so shall it not be among you, but whosoever will be great among you shall be your minister. And whosoever of you will be the chiefest shall be servant of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister and to give his life a ransom for many. So if anybody had the right to be ministered to, who would it have been? Christ. But even he came not to be ministered to, but to minister and to give his life a ransom for many. So again, we see those same things, right? We see the pride, we see the selfishness, we see the wanting the preeminence over their brethren. And we see that today. We see it in the world. We see it in the church sometimes, unfortunately. They didn't understand the nature of the kingdom. We've talked about that, and there's no need to just beating that in the head. But Jesus teaches them humility. These stories are recorded to teach humility, not only to them, but to us, right? That we're servants of all. An elder is not an elder because, oh, look at me, I'm an elder. Or a deacon, or Chuck. Well, I'm the evangelist. That's the wrong attitude, isn't it? Right, because that's not, if you got that attitude, number one, that's wrong. But it's not a position to be desired for that purpose. It's a role to serve. We're servants. We're serving each other because we all want to go to heaven. We want to help each other go to heaven. So we studied all these parables, and all these parables talk about being humble, humility, service, commitment. We talked about the rich young ruler and the fact that Jesus wanted him to be committed. We talked about his riches and those kind of things. We talked about being little children in heart. We talked about the value of a soul in the parables of the lost corn and the lost sheep if we go back several weeks ago. So all of those things are teaching us service, commitment, being humble, being servants. So as we continue, and let's go back over to Mark, let's go from Matthew chapter 20 to Mark chapter 10. And I'm covering a lot this morning, but we still want to cover it in the manner that we need to. But we've talked about a lot of these things and what the principles are. So as we come to Mark chapter 10 and verse 46, they were coming to Jericho. One text says there were two blind men. One says there was one blind man, and his name was Bartimaeus, sitting on the side of the road. And as they passed by, they said, Lord Jesus, thy son of David, have mercy on me. Well, the crowd tried to do what? Be quiet, you know? But they cried the more, so Jesus said, bring them to me. And he said, what would you have me to do? And Bartimaeus said, Lord, that I might receive my sight. And so Jesus was moved with compassion and touched his eyes, and he received his sight and immediately received it, and he followed Jesus, glorifying God, and all who saw it gave praise to God. And again, he didn't have to register to receive this miracle. Jesus touched his eyes, he received his sight, and he got up and he followed Jesus, giving praise to God. So this is another miracle that proves that Jesus is who he is. And I think it's interesting that Bartimaeus referred to him as the son of David. What's significant in that? The line of Christ, right? Knew the old law. There you go. David was going to have a descendant that would come through him, and that descendant would be who? The Messiah, right? So here these Jews are that won't recognize him for that. Here's this blind man sitting beside the road that calls him the son of David, recognizing him as who he is. And after he was healed, he followed Jesus, praising and glorifying him. So now we turn over to Luke chapter 19. Luke chapter 19. And I realize I'm taking you all over the Gospels this morning. But so Jesus is going into Jericho, and there is this tax collector who is a chief tax collector. In other words, he's over all the other tax collectors. And his name is Zacchaeus, and he was very rich. And we know the story. We sing the song, and I'm not going to make you sing the song. Zacchaeus was a wee little man. Okay? I could, but I won't. Okay? For time's sake. Some of you might walk up and go in Bob's class or something. I don't know. So he was short, and he couldn't see, so he wanted to see Jesus. So he ran ahead of the crowd, and he climbed up in a tree. So he wanted to see Jesus so bad that he was going to do whatever it took to be able to see him. And so when Jesus walks by, what happens? Yeah, he looked up at him and he said, come down from there because I'm going home with you this day. So he goes home with him. Well, the crowd's tongues start wagging because Jesus is going home to eat with what? A sinner, okay? A tax collector. He's going home to eat with a sinner. So their tongues are just wagging about it. But Zacchaeus stood up and said what? Half my goods I give to the poor, and if I have wronged any man, I will restore fourfold. And Jesus said, this day is salvation come to this house, for as much as he also is a son of Abraham, so he would be a Jew. For the Son of Man has come to what? Seek and save the lost. And I think that's important. So Zacchaeus had this strong desire to see Jesus. And being God in the flesh, Jesus would have known his heart, would he not? And so Zacchaeus was a sinner. He was a Jew, but he was a sinner. So Jesus reached out to him, right? And told him, you know, I'm coming to your house today. And Zacchaeus repented in his heart and wanted to make restitution. If he had done anything wrong, he'd repay that fourfold. He'd give what he had to the poor, half of what he had to the poor, or whatever. He wanted to make it right. So there's really a contrast here between the rich young ruler and Zacchaeus. The rich young ruler, his riches were so important to him that he just walked away. But here's Zacchaeus, who equally is rich, for sure, who counted those riches, I'll give half of them to the poor. If I've done anybody wrong, I'll restore fourfold. Because his heart was fixed on what? Doing right, right? So you have that contrast here, because Zacchaeus was looking for the unsearchable riches in Christ, just as we're looking for those unsearchable riches today, right? So we learn a lesson from that because of the attitude that he had, you know, and we asked ourselves the question, are we willing to make that sacrifice? That's a question that we've asked many, many times in this study. Are we willing to take up our cross and follow Jesus? Are we willing to take up our cross daily, to be fully committed to serving the Lord? And we've talked about that. But Jesus made the statement, this day is salvation come to this house, for as much as he also is the son of Abraham, for the Son of Man is come to seek and to save that which was lost. That was Jesus' purpose for coming to earth, wasn't it? To seek and save those who are lost. Without his coming to earth, there would be no salvation, because it's only through his shed blood that we can be saved. God commands us to go out and seek and save the lost, right? Not that we could save it in the way that Jesus did, but we are to seek the lost and try to convert the lost. We have a command to do that. It's the work of the church. So are we taking advantage of those opportunities? Are we willing to take advantage of those opportunities when they come? And a lot of times we're not going to have success, and that can be discouraging. But we have to try. We have to try. If we're standing in judgment and a guy that I've worked with for 20 years or whatever walks up to me and says, why don't you tell me? What are we going to say? Now, he may say no if you talk to him about it. You know, and I have that situation at work. A guy I've talked to many, many times, and it's like, oh, ceiling fall in if I came in, you know. So you may have that kind of response, but then again, you may have an opposite response. But also, if we live right before them and they see the influence that we have on them, then does that not count for a lot also? They see the way we live. They see the way we act. They see the way that we talk. They see the way we don't talk. We have that command to come and to seek and to save those who will. Questions? I've done a lot of talking this morning. Comments?
I think one of the problems of trying to reach the lost is our society in America has watered down Christianity so much that people don't want to have any type of personal responsibility.
Right. And we've had that happen here. And everybody here knows of others that that's happened to. I mean, if you come and you want to serve God and you want to be faithful to God, you're going to be workers in the kingdom. You're going to be doing the things that God would have you to do, okay? But if I want to, I can find a big congregation, 250, 300, 350, 400, and I can go and kind of lose myself in that congregation and not have to do anything. But to what Chuck is saying, he's not talking about a faithful congregation of the Lord's people. He's talking about denominationalism. He's talking about Catholicism. He's talking about whatever. Where it's so watered down, I see that every Sunday morning, every Sunday evening when I come to worship. I pass a non-denominational congregation, and some of you do too. And on Sunday evening, they got this big tent set out in front of the entrance to their worship center, and they got a band set up out there, you know? Or, you know, one evening they may have chairs set up around, they got a big tent or whatever, and they got a stage, and they got the band, and they got all this kind of stuff. What are they getting? Are they getting the true unadulterated word of the gospel? If they were to take away on Wednesday evening, they're there, the sanctuary as they call it, lights are off, so they're back in the back somewhere, they're probably having a meal or something, I don't know. So you take all that stuff away, and you take away the meals, and you take away the band, and you take away the entertainment. How many of those people are going to stay? Probably not many, because that's what they're going for. They're going for the entertainment. They're going for the loaves and the fishes, as Jesus would say. Because it's been watered down so much, and I'm not going to say that you can't have a big congregation and be faithful. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that in any form, and I hope no one even thinks that. But if I don't want to be involved, I can seek those things. And if I don't come on Sunday night, I don't come on Wednesday night or whatever, probably nobody even notices, okay? But that's not what I'm talking about here. These big mega churches that you see, they didn't get that way by standing firm for the truth and preaching the truth like the truth ought to be, and preaching and teaching that we're to be workers, that we're to be servants, that we're to serve, and what we're to do as those workers. They didn't get that way by teaching that, okay? And we know that, right? So exactly, the denominational world, whatever, has watered that down to the point that, yep. And I appreciate that comment, Chuck. So continuing in 19, and we'll just talk about it shortly, and then next Sunday Daryl can take it over, but we have the parable of the pounds. And Jesus, again, is teaching humility. And he's teaching some other things too. But the parable of the pounds is similar to the parable of the talents. And we're familiar with that. Where this man went to a far country to receive the kingship that had been given him. And there were those that sent a messenger after him saying, we're not going to accept you as our king. But before he left, he gave some of his servants a pound, okay? And as he returns, we see the same thing as in the talents. The one that had one gained 10 and so on down the line until the last one didn't gain anything. Here's your pound, okay? I kept it for you. I knew what kind of man you were, so here it is. So we have that same thing there, okay? But the one who had kept the one talent, his talent was taken away from him. And Jesus said, take from him the pound and give it to him that hath 10 pounds. And they said unto him, Lord, he had 10 pounds. For I say unto you, take that unto everyone that hath shall be given, and from him that hath not, even that he hath shall be taken away from him. And those who hated the ruler and had stated that they wouldn't accept his rule, they were put to death. So there's some things that we can get from this. The far country and would be heaven, and Jesus being sent to receive his crown, his kingship, would be after his death and resurrection, he ascended to heaven, but the kingship, the kingdom would be what? Be the church, wouldn't it? Okay? So those who hated the ruler and sent after him saying they wouldn't accept his rule over him, in this case, would be the Jews. In our case, it would be anybody that won't accept Christ, okay? So the servants who were given the talents would be, of course, his disciples, his faithful servants, and by their faithfulness, they were given rewards. But the guy who didn't use the talent was deemed unfaithful. His talent was taken away from him, just as those who refused to accept him today will be lost, and those who refuse him as their ruler, will be lost. They'll be destroyed. Their disobedient will be lost. So there are lessons in this. And I guess notice each servant received something. And this is the same thing as the talents. Each member of the church has the ability to work, has the ability to do certain things for God, okay? And we're responsible for using those abilities to do the things that God would have us to do. Now, some people have different abilities that other people don't have. But notice about the guy who didn't use a talent. He didn't do anything that was dishonorable, did he? He didn't gamble it away. He didn't spend it. It was still there. He just simply failed to use it. And in failing to use it, he was deemed to be unfaithful. He knew that this nobleman expected more from him, but he was slothful in spite of it, okay? So what does it teach us? Well, it teaches us that everyone, regardless of what our capacities are to work, that we have to work in the kingdom. And slothfulness is not acceptable, right? And that the talents we have will either increase or decrease, whether we use them or whether we don't use them. And that we'll be held accountable for how we use what God has given us. I'm not an elder because I just, you know, it's something that I can't say it's not something I don't desire, but I'm not that because of wanting some position. I'm because of that because the need was there and I have the ability, and I don't want to stand before God one day and tell him, okay, well, I had the ability. I didn't do it when I was asked. Chuck's not preaching. Well, Chuck loves to preach, okay? But Chuck preaches because he has the ability. He has the desire. And God has given him that ability and given him that knowledge, and I'm sure he don't want to stand before God one day and say, well, I had the ability and knowledge, just didn't do it. Same thing with us, all of us. We have abilities, have to use those abilities. You don't want to stand before God one day and say, well, I had the ability to do it, I just didn't do it. So lesson to us. So we're to take up our cross and follow Jesus. We're to have the attitude of humility. We're to have faith. We're to be busy in the service of God. Those are things that we've been talking about the last few weeks. So we'll stop there, and Daryl will take over next Sunday morning. Thank you for your attention and your comments.